May I just say... Monday, and welcome to the Geek Squared Show, the show where we talk about the things that we talk about. My name's Emma.
I'm Tilly.
And today we are going to be talking about the epitome of geekdom, the series based on the critically acclaimed video game, The Last of Us Season 1. The whole world was watching, video game fans were watching, non-video game fans were watching, video game fans can now talk to non-video game fans about this amazing game slash series, and it is so damn exciting. But before we start, I do want to issue a short apology regarding last week's episode when we recast The Princess Bride for 2023. First of all, I want to apologize on behalf of casting Fred Savage because I did some digging and it turns out multiple women have come forward about inappropriate behavior on sets that he has been on. I don't want that man in my movie. You know what? I said that he could play the dad of like the meta story that's happening. You can have his character present, like his back to the camera or like a voice off screen. I also want to apologize for misgendering Susie Eddie Izzard. She's always been a really big inspiration to me because she's been openly gender fluid and talks about it openly. So I just wanted everybody to know I cast her as Vicini in my cast. And like, if she was still open to it, I'd happily have her as Vicini still. It would just make my trio of misfits more gay. All right, now back to the topic in question, The Last of Us. Now, if you've been under a rock for the past few months, The Last of Us can very easily be discounted as just another zombie series because it is post-apocalyptic, but it is totally not about the zombies. And it's really just a story about love and what people do for love, the good things, the bad things.
Emphasis on the bad things.
Emphasis on the bad things. Follows the character of Joel, who is a smuggler, and he's tasked with delivering a teenage girl, Ellie, across the country. Why? Spoilers, heavy spoilers, so I'm not gonna say. And of course, it just happens to take place 20 years after the fungal infection called Cordyceps caused a pandemic and collapsed all of society. Huge spoiler alert for the first season and the first game. However, there is a second game and then a confirmed second season. We're gonna try our damnedest not to spoil anything for potential season 2 watchers who have not played the game. So whether you've played the games or not, you can listen to this episode. However, 2.0, if you're interested in conversations about The Last of Us video game, plural, both of them, spoilers, check out season 2 episode 34 of the Geek Squared Show, this podcast you happen to be listening to right now, where there will without a doubt be huge spoilers for season 2.
Many.
Ye be warned. But that's going to cover both video games and all the details about those, how it was made, defining the world, why it was such a success, all the video game specifics. So if that is something that you're looking for, we're going to direct you over there. But if you're looking for something about the show, welcome. Why don't we give The Last of Us HBO series a rating out of 10, just right off the bat. Let's set the scene.
I almost feel guilty giving it this rating, but I'm going to say 7.5.
Okay. I said 8.5. My favorite video game, my favorite show. I could not be happier with what has happened. But I just know that season 2 is going to pop off. So I can't give it 10 out of 10 because there is a potential for season 2 to get 10 out of 10. I also just shaved off a little bit because there were moments where the pacing was a little bit stop and go. And that didn't bother me because I had faith in Craig Mazin and Neil Druckmann to deliver the absolute best thing they could. But for the average viewer, I feel like that could have been a little turbulent. Not that I think it would lose viewership because of that, but maybe just lose a little bit of interest and maybe some people miss some details because of the pacing. Still hoping season 2 gets 10 out of 10.
I will say, I kind of wish we had a third person here because you've played the games and you watch the show, obviously, yes. And I have watched you play the game,
right.
But I have not played them myself, but it would be interesting to see how someone that had not even like heard of the games.
Yeah. Two of our friends did not play the game. They didn't know anything. They watched it week to week. First of all, they normally don't watch shows week to week. So the fact that they were doing that is saying a lot because it kept them interested and they needed to know what happened right away in the next episode. And they were both really blown away. Now that we've rated it, of course we can't go much further without doing the geekiest thing we could possibly do, a quick video game to show comparison. Obviously, when making a video game adaptation, the big question is where's the line between recreating something line per line, frame per frame, and introducing some originality? So how did you feel about that balance?
I mean, first of all, it's been however many years since I even saw the first game.
Right.
And I didn't even play it. You know, like, I know that there was scenes that were literally stripped right from the game, which, you know, I saw pictures of, like,
side by side. Yeah.
And it's cool. It's cool that they did that. From my standpoint, it wasn't, like, I wouldn't have noticed anyways.
Okay. That's fair enough to say. I'm in the position where, this being my favorite video game, I think the balance was so perfectly done because of this team that was Neil Druckmann, the video game creator, and Craig Mazin, this amazing, amazing director that we know from Chernobyl. God, he's just a genius. I can sing his praise for an entire episode. But anyway, just because we had both of them together, there was a perfect marriage of, like, okay, now we're gonna take a scene from the video game. We're gonna shove Sarah in that truck, and from now on, it's a cutscene, you know? Mm-hmm. In that first episode, when they're driving, they see the house burning. It was on the opposite side of the street, but, you know, you saw the cop cars go by. Everything happened at exactly the same time. And it still feels exciting to the viewers, because I find that they always chose the highest impact scenes, whether that's emotional impact or, like,
visually stunning,
yeah, to recreate. Mm-hmm. And that was a really, really good idea, bottom line.
The only scene that I genuinely recognized immediately from the game was the giraffe, because yeah, that was the best part of that
game. So unexpected, right?
Yeah, I was like, yeah, giraffe? Hello?
Exactly. The one question I had, and I think a lot of video game players had this question as well, was, where are all the infected?
Anyone that has played a video game that is very campaign-based, like, there's parts that are going to be a little repetitive, because right, it's a lot of looting, mm-hmm, it's a lot of crafting things, right, and healing and fighting the generic bat. Like, you want to see the same episode seven times
yeah,
in a
exactly,
row? Like, no.
Exactly.
So I'm fine with not having infected be yeah, the climax of every episode. It's
for
like,
sure, for
thank
sure,
God it wasn't.
Exactly. Because then it would start to fall in the same formula that The Walking Dead eventually got into. And then, you know, that just dropped off
poop,
the face of the earth. In a video game, you just need obstacles. And there was only so much time Craig Mazin and Neil Druckmann had to tell this beautiful arc of a story. Mm-hmm. I'll trade Bill and Frank for an extra bloater, you know? Any of those high emotion, humanizing elements of the series, like David. I'll take expansion on David's character over however many clickers, you know?
We'll get to that episode,
yeah,
but I cannot stress enough how well that was done.
Yes, absolutely.
Just like,
we'll get there. To be continued. All this that we're saying is something that Craig Mazin said he kept referring to, is that emotional impact is just as effective as physical impact when you're watching it. When you are the character, when you are Joel and you're scurrying around trying to evade clickers, that's different.
Mm-hmm.
Versus, like, talking to Tommy and it's like, oh, press X to cry, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
that's not gonna work.
Yeah.
But in a TV show, as a viewer, it totally is going to work. And
yeah,
the payoff is huge. So, not a zombie series, but a zombie series.
zombie adjacent series.
Yeah. Let's get into a little bit about each episode, because
okay,
they're all so different and they were all so impactful that I feel like we can't talk about it as a whole without doing each episode individually. You know, let's just create some subsections before we just go off on tangents.
Because we would.
I would like to ask you before we get into the details, but then we'll readdress them. What was your favorite episode?
The episode that hit me the hardest. I don't know if it's my favorite, but it's the one that just, like, solidified my understanding of what this show was going to be. And it was the Sam and Henry episode.
So that was episode 5, Endure and Survive. The first episode was phenomenal. We'll get to that in a second. I think my favorite episode was episode 6, called Kin. There was not a bad one in the bunch. Episode 1, amazing first episode, set the tone right away, covered a lot of ground. Holy, I didn't expect the first episode to do everything that it did. I didn't even expect to see Ellie in the first episode, if I'm being entirely honest. So I'm really glad that the first episode covered as much ground as it did, because you needed to establish.
It would have dragged on.
Yeah, and you needed to establish the world. I instantly had so much faith in the core cast that we were introduced to, the Pedro Pascal, Bella Ramsey, and Anna Torv as Joel, Ellie, and Tess, respectively. I thought, oh, you bastards, because you're setting this up for it to be the three of them, you know? The show is cruel.
Yeah, oh yeah. Oh yeah. They definitely purposely messed with the game fans.
Yeah.
Hey, we're going to change this one little thing,
yeah,
and it's just going to hurt you a little
bit
more.
Yeah, and it surprised you with another thing, you know? Episode 1, set the foundation. Beautiful. Let's jump to episode 2.
That whole, what was it, Columbia?
Oh, Jakarta, where it started?
Yeah, that whole sequence with the woman, she just gets, like, taken. Then she gets the request into the cordyceps thing. And just the change of tone going from, like, hey, I don't really know what's going on, whatever. And then she goes and sees the
tendrils.
Disgusting, by the way.
That was a change from the video game, from spores.
So disgusting.
Yeah, to tendrils.
Like, I can withstand seeing a lot of disgusting things. Like, blood and guts don't bother me. There is nothing more disgusting to me than those freaking things coming out of their mouth and just like,
yeah, and just reaching for you, physically reaching towards
like,
you.
Like literally gave me the heebie-jeebies. My spine is tingling as I'm talking about it right now. Oh, it was so gross. And one of my fears is trench foot. And that's like,
fungus.
That's fungus involved. Like I don't know what it is about fungus.
It's just not for you.
It's just not for you. Me. Don't kiss me with that mouth.
Point being, I feel like the idea behind episode 2 was just to make us as uncomfortable as we could possibly be.
Mission accomplished.
Yeah. Between the tendrils and then...
Even you just saying tendrils, okay, just like...
to the subject of the, you know, being completely naked, dehumanized. And then at the end when Tess is infected and that literal kiss of death, it just sought to make us uncomfortable.
Why did she just stand there?
Could have been the cordyceps keeping her still.
I need a safety pillow. Okay.
I'll move on. The factor I was talking about earlier with this perfect marriage between replicating the game and letting the show being its own thing and adding originality was probably perfect in this episode because there were lots of nods to the video game, like the whole Ellie can't swim thing and then Joel just jumps in the water and it's not even waist deep. Tess, when she injured her ankle, she wrapped it in tape. That's how you heal in the game. You wrap tape around yourself. Of course, I saw Tess's death coming. Sorry to go back to this moment to have it in your head.
It's okay.
Think about the moment right before. So she's telling Joel, you gotta save who you can. And you see like this humanized version of Joel. You just see him shut off and he just goes. Seeing that, knowing what was to come, it scared me for the people Joel would encounter.
Oh, we'll get to that. That we'll get to that in the last episode. We didn't even talk about the freaking clicker.
Let's go back.
Nasty.
The clicker in episode 2, right from the video game, which was awesome. It was like a dream come true. May I just say... Let's move on to episode 3. I mean, a long, long time.
Gay as hell.
Nick Offerman, the perfect Bill. Murray Bartlett as Frank, the perfect foil. The perfect husband for this man.
Yeah, the chemistry between them
two. Oh my God, it was so good. It was just a beautiful episode. Like I said earlier, I'll trade more Bill and Frank for however many clickers you want. Mm-hmm. A lot of the time, media will get gay yearning wrong. Mm. This could have not been more right. Like when I tell you that I wept, I seriously did every single time. I love that they completely changed Bill's character from the game because in the game, his role is very mechanical. You meet him and he's like grumpy, but he's also too many human emotions at once. A messy human being. He teaches you about trip mines and he has them all over his town. And then he teaches you how to make nail bombs. And then you run into your first bloater with him. Essentially, he's gone after that. Mm-hmm. Does he live? Does he die? We don't know. HBO Bill doesn't even interact with Joel and Ellie, yet he still leaves Joel that letter in the end. Holy, that sets the entire tone. At the end of the letter, it says, "That's why men like you and me are here. We have a job to do, and God help any motherfucker to get in our way."
I like that they also made it clear that Bill did not really like Joel.
Yeah, just here is what we are made to do. He could have not read that letter and left Ellie in that house. I've seen mixed reviews on this episode, and to the people who are saying this didn't have anything to do with season one, I would say go back and watch it now, having watched the entire season, because it encapsulates everything that season one is about. I'll leave you with this. Bill made the decision to drink the wine himself. He made that decision.
Yeah, I hadn't even made that connection.
Yeah, right? We're going to get to Left Behind, too, and how that mirrors... Anyway, episode 4, Please Hold My Hand. So this is where we see Joel and Ellie start to become the duo. He protects her until he falls asleep because his body has to. And then she gets up and protects him. He finds some food. She makes him laugh uncontrollably. Unadulterated laughter just like spills out of him.
Literally at the worst joke, too.
Right? It runs in your genes. Yeah. The foundation, again, just like the first episode, the foundation of their relationship is rock solid.
It's almost like the first 4 episodes were their own season, mm-hmm. and then the next 5 were, it was like 4, mm-hmm. and then 1 in the middle, and then...
Yeah, new beginnings. You're no longer the package, I'm no longer the delivery man. I like also that in this episode, we got more of, as Craig Mason calls it, the other. So we got Kathleen and her community. We were able to remove ourselves from Joel and Ellie because we weren't playing as Joel in a mm-hmm. video game. And I mean, Kathleen, Melanie Lynskey, the most enigmatic character ever. It's like the nice kindergarten teacher who sends you out in the hall one time and then you're like, oh my God.
Yeah, and then in that hallway you get shot.
She was not in the video game, to preface. Like, I didn't see it coming. You could tell she was struggling, and these people who were following her were kind of like, why are we following her again?
But
and
also, it was just, like, what other choice?
Yeah, they were trapped. Everybody was trapped. Jeffrey Pierce, who was Perry, her right-hand man, was Tommy from the video game. Nice little cameo. The cherry on top for me, the hearing impairment.
Yeah.
I am hearing impaired, if you did not know. Also on the same side as Joel. Playing this game when I was a young teenager and being so connected to Ellie, and then getting to watch this show as an adult and realizing, okay, I can no longer relate to Ellie as strongly. I'm now Joel. Mm. There are kids in my life that I would protect as Joel does Ellie. That transition is very cool, just to be in that age range. So on a personal note, it was very, very cool.
On a hearing impaired personal note.
It was very cool that they introduced that. On a general note, it was just cool that they introduced this humanizing quality, because he can't always be the action hero. All right, episode 5.
Are we ready?
Are you ready?
I ain't.
Take it away. Endure and survive.
Episode 5. So we get to see these wonderful brothers. Mm-hmm. One is deaf.
One is deaf and has leukemia and is aged down from his video game counterpart. That was just
cruel. Yeah.
That was just mean. He's about the same age as Ellie in the video game, but he's like 9 in the show.
Unlikely partnership between the two duos.
Yes, yes. We saw relationships beginning to form between all of them, because although they were the same in the sense that it was a protector and a vulnerable child on both accounts, mm-hmm. Joel was older than Henry, Ellie was older than Sam.
They all grew up in this foster home together.
Yeah, like, yeah. Yeah, yeah. It was just, I'll take you under my wing kind of feeling. Mm-hmm. And then?
So, first of all, there was the whole chase with Kathleen and whatnot, which mm-hmm. was insane. Yeah. And then, you know, they're on that street, the old guy sniper in the window.
Oh, another humanizing quality, because in the video game, that's just some dude that you just pop in the head. Mm-hmm. Fedra, you know?
Yeah.
In the show, it's this old dude just doing what he's supposed to do. And Joel begs him not to point the gun at him. Did he do that because he had no other choice? Did he do that because he was like, I'm old, I can't shoot for so just pull the trigger. And I feel like maybe. Joel maybe understood that. And that's why he said, please don't make me do this.
But then we get the freaking sinkhole.
The bloater comes out. There's a child clicker who's jumping all over the place.
That was not cool, man. As soon as that thing starts like contorting in the car,
not okay, man. So we deal with all that.
And then, like, everybody dies.
Yeah, freaking everybody dies.
The young man, this poor young man, this Henry. Little child, this poor little deaf child.
Sam.
I have never felt that feeling before, watching that scene where you don't even get to see him do it, but he's like, what have I done? What have I done?
Yeah.
Pop! And you hear the noise that comes out of Bella. I was like I've been, you know, taken aback by some scenes and different things, but like that was true horror.
Yes.
Because she makes that noise and then it's just silence.
It's just silence. Watching that moment, screen goes black. I just saw my own reflection in the screen. And I think I was as horrified as the characters.
What have I done?
Yeah, I think I was as horrified as the characters.
You could literally feel the tension coming out mm-hmm. from the screen.
Mm-hmm. Are we ready to move on?
Yeah.
Episode 6, Kin. Probably my favorite episode, as I said earlier, which caught me as off guard as the Bill and Frank episode, because I felt like someone had just pulled the rug from under me and I fell right on the small of my back, couldn't breathe, crying, seeing stars, like the whole thing. But before getting into the heavy part of the episode, though, like, can I just shout out Maria? They changed her character completely. Let's go, young, black, educated queen. She was perfect, running that whole community. Tommy was right there following her, following them orders, ready to just do the absolute best in that community, which was nothing we had seen before. We had seen Kathleen's community that was in shambles. Literally, there was a sinkhole.
I would like to formally refer to that sinkhole as Satan's butthole.
Yeah, this was the episode where I know it's hard to say this because I know from episode 1 it was just so obvious, even before episode 1, but I was like, oh my god, Pedro is Joel. Seeing Joel cry and then seeing him not, like in the video game where he says to Tommy, you need to take her, and doesn't really say why, but you know it's because he's getting too attached. He's begging Tommy to take Ellie because he can't protect her. He feels like he can't do enough. Bro, I was broken. I was absolutely torn apart to see him begging Tommy. Oh my god. And then immediately he goes into Ellie's room and I saw her sitting in that bay window, which is exactly how that talk is set up in the video game. And I was like, oh god, we're doing this now. We're doing this now. We're doing this now. We're doing this now.
Yeah, that hurt.
Yeah, that whole conversation happens about everybody has left me except for you. And they recreated that scene almost line for line from the video game. But what really got me is when Ellie says, I'm not her, you know. And instead of Joel saying, as he does in the video game, you're treading on mighty thin ice, he becomes that shut down version of Joel again. Says, no, just no. I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about that moment. Mm-hmm. Oh my god, that was so impactful. It was one word. And that's what made it my favorite episode. I just got chills up my entire spine just remembering that moment again. And I have to move on, or else I'm going to fall apart.
Yep.
Episode 7, Left Behind, the DLC of Game 1. So glad they made room for it. Oddly enough, I felt a little bit detached. That's not to say it was bad by any means.
I'm glad I wasn't the only one that felt that way.
Okay, okay.
Because it was misplaced?
I don't think it was
like,
misplaced
in order, or I don't know. Like, I can't put my finger on why it like, didn't fit for me.
I don't know. And I don't know if that's because Episode 6, Kin, ended up being my favorite. And I was so emotionally impacted by that. You would think I would love this episode. It's gay as heck.
Yeah. You know?
But again, that's not to say it was bad. It was really, really good. I don't think they could have placed it anywhere else. I'm glad they made room for it. It was good overall. And like that friends to what could have been lovers story is damn good.
Oh, let's be poetic. Yeah, let's just lose our minds together. And then ouch.
Yes.
Big ouch.
This is what I was talking about with the parallel between Bill and Frank and Ellie and Riley because... Oh, God. So Ellie and Riley set up the exact same narrative that Bill and Frank did. We're going to live our lives for the time we have left, and then we're both just going to die. And Ellie was robbed. That part wasn't in the episode. That's all left up to interpretation. And arguably, that hurts more than having seen her smashing things and possibly having to kill Riley.
Yeah. Yeah. Just knowing the fact that she had mentally prepared for death and then was forced into the grieving. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh,
it hurts. Oof. It hurts. But that's ultimately how Joel and Ellie understand each other. The other is fulfilling things that they didn't even know that they needed. Like Ellie sees Joel and she's like, I need to be protected. Riley was that for her.
Tell you what, she don't need no protection anymore.
All right. Episode 8, when we are in need. David.
Wow.
We explored a whole lot of the other, giving David a backstory, made him even more terrifying than he was in the game.
Just even that intro where he's in the hall talking to everyone.
Yes, yes. It gives you a sense of hope, false hope. This is something that we haven't seen in this world that's falling apart, faith. And then that is ripped away when you realize who David is. He thinks Ellie and him are the same. He shows love through violence.
Yeah.
I mean, the scene where they meet, where Ellie meets the two guys, that was well done, I felt.
First of all, the other guy, James, Troy Baker, Joel, from the video game.
Oh, yeah, I didn't even realize.
Super weird. He shot Ellie's horse.
But yeah, like the first meeting where she's like, you guys are under my control.
Yeah,
right
yeah.
Now.
Making her voice all deep. Weapons on the ground. Yeah. Save for Buddy Boy. She's trying so hard to be Joel. She's like, I got to do what Joel taught me how to do. I got to take this gun, shoot us a deer. And if we're in danger, I got to protect us.
Yeah, it's so coy, but they're playing chess with each other.
Oh, for sure. Ellie's so
smart. Ellie first gets the upper hand, but then lowers her guard.
Because David, he's asking those questions.
Yeah.
There's this repeating, even though he's like, I'm a teacher. I found faith. I preach, I'm a leader. There's something wrong. And Ellie knows it because he keeps saying to her, what's your name? And she doesn't answer. And then later in the episode, when they have her in that cage, what's your name? She doesn't answer. What's your name? She doesn't answer. Until...
Yeah, that whole jail cell sequence.
So intense. I think that was the strongest acting that I saw from Bella Ramsey. Just the way that they were like an animal in a cage, all in a corner, like never taking her eyes off David.
Yeah, and that was the ultimate chess move, I feel. Ellie starts to like act as if she's simmering down, and then she eventually gets loose.
Yeah. Well, Before it gets scary as heck, Joel
freaking
wakes up. What down? Like, holy. Oh my God. Had me shaking. When I heard him scream like that, I was like, Joel, it's okay. I'm going to get my whole life together. I'm going to clean the room. I'm going to do the dishes. Don't worry about it. It's fine.
When Joel is like interrogating the two guys and one guy tells him and he like points it out with the knife. And then the other guy's like trying to beg whatever. Yep. Like, I'm not telling you, blah, blah. And he's like, no, I believe him.
Bam!
Dead. I was like, oh, that was cold, man. And that was cold.
Yeah, it was so good. That was such a good scene.
It perfectly explained the way that Joel was going to be. Now at this point, he owes his life to Ellie.
Being without Ellie is what made him lose that composure.
You know, we see that side of Joel, and then we see the Ellie without Joel.
Yeah.
When she's just slamming, just like slam, slam.
And then she stops, and then she keeps going.
Bella is so good at doing fear.
Yeah.
I don't know, like ancient warrior awakening.
Amazonian.
Yeah, like seriously.
We're at a loss for words. Without any spoilers, that is going to shine in season 2. I also liked that eventually, before the episode ended, we did get her stopping. And then she walks out into the unknown. It's a complete
She doesn't even have a plan.
Imagery. And then we get that iconic Joel finds
it's
her.
It's me.
It's me. Yeah. Baby girl. It's
and then
it's
they're
okay.
just like leaning on each other.
Oh, Jesus. And then the episode ends. And we get episode 9. Look for the light.
Giraffes. Awesome.
Ashley Johnson as Ellie's mom. Awesome.
That wasn't in the video game, was it?
It was not in the video game. However, it felt like it could have been because Neil Druckmann wrote it for the video game, which I love that they were able to introduce this. I've seen people divided on the disclosure that Ellie's immunity was like probably because her mom was bit before the umbilical cord was cut. And then we got more context on Marlene. We found out that she was Anna's, I don't know if best is the word, confidant. But like, yeah, longtime friend. Yeah.
You feel how hard these decisions are for these people, but that almost makes the emotion harder.
Yes, yes. Some incredible foreshadowing to see Anna lie. I cut the umbilical cord before. And meanwhile, you can see, I don't think Marlene really believed her. But like, what else was she going to do, right? Yeah. We have Anna lie to protect Ellie. And then that is directly mirrored by the end of the episode. Ellie's surrogate father does the exact same thing to save her. He lies.
I mean, in episode 8, when he's interrogating those two guys, you see a very ferocious Joel.
Yes.
And then we see a very questionable, ferocious Joel.
Yep. Yep.
Seeing him run, not even run.
Nope, just walk.
Calmly with no expression, pop every single one of them mother suckers. Mm-hmm.
Including the surgeon. Doctor. The surgeon. He didn't even look at him. The guy was just like, you can't be here. He went, pow. He was looking at Ellie the whole time.
If I saw that man walking through that hospital, I would not have even tried to fight.
Imagine being a person witnessing that. You.
I just saw John Wick come to the hospital.
Some dude just shot up a hospital. Like, these people were doing good things. Like, they were doing what they
needed. Literally everybody.
Like, doctors, med students.
Yeah.
Everybody.
Back to the note that Bill and Frank left. Yep. God help any mother sucker.
Who stands in our way. Honestly, Bill knew. Bill knew what he was capable of.
Oh, yeah.
Before we ask the decade-long question, I do want to go back to when Joel tells Ellie the truth about his scar. He tells Ellie that he was the guy who missed, and he just missed. I know why you're telling me this. It's because time heals all wounds. It wasn't time that did it.
That little look that they give each other.
It's sad, though, because in that moment, I think that's the moment that she trusted him completely. And then immediately, that was ripped away from her.
The theme of the choice being removed from Ellie.
Yeah.
She's treated first as cargo, then a cure.
Before that, the choice to die with someone who was very important to her was removed.
I feel like we haven't even seen half the emotion that Bella can bring to the character.
We definitely haven't. And it terrifies me and excites me all in one. Okay, before we end this episode, we have to ask the decade-long question that has plagued video game fans for the past 10 years. Did Joel do the right thing?
Is taking a gamble the right thing?
Mm-hmm.
Is Marlene a villain?
That's the thing. The Last of Us really toys with the idea that there are no bad guys. There's just perspective.
Yeah.
Because you could also say...
David.
You're right. Because you could also say, from Joel's point of view, like, they didn't know 100% that this was going to work. So what makes it okay for her life to be so disposable? I'll end it with this before we do our fun fact to wrap everything up. Neil Druckmann has told a story, and he tells it way better than I do. But just to sum it up, he tells a story about when he was little, raised in Israel, and there was this young boy who was captured and held hostage by another country, essentially. And the Israeli government traded a large number of Israeli prisoners to free this boy. And young Neil asked his dad if he thought that that was the right decision to make. And without saying yes or no, his father said, are you asking me as the prime minister of Israel, or are you asking me as this boy's father?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the linchpin of this entire story.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Are you ready for a fun fact? Fun fact about everybody's favorite internet daddy, Pedro Pascal. He has told this story on the internet before, so you may have heard this before. I just want something to bring up the mood before the end of the episode. So there is the story that he tells when he got the part of Joel. He was working on another project. He had a busy day. He was having trouble sleeping because he says he's like a chronic insomniac. Took an Ambien, got the call. They said, congratulations, you're going to play Joel. Ecstatic. He fell asleep. He woke up, didn't remember a thing. And he was like, oh, damn, I really wanted that role.
Sucker.
So he had the complete joy. This is such a Pedro Pascal story. He had the complete joy of hearing twice that he got the role. And I hope that leaves you on a happier note than The Last of Us did, but still very enjoyable. I'm going to watch it again. I don't often watch TV series over, but this is like, without a doubt, going to watch a long, long time for a fifth time.
I'll probably not watch it until season two is like about to come out. Fair and enough. Then I'll flow through it all together.
Sounds like a good idea. Well, this has been The Geek Squared Show, the show where we talk about the things that we talk about. I almost said my name's Tilly. What?
I almost said my name's Emma. I'm Joel.
I'm Joel, and you're Ellie. Below, you can find all the links to our socials, as well as our Geek Squared monthly newsletter that is going to be rolling out soon. Comes out at the end of every month. You get all your information about the episodes that have come out this month
for free,
and episodes that we will be doing in the future. So make sure you subscribe to the newsletter
for free.
Get subscribed, get subscribing. Also, you can find the link to our Buy Me a Coffee if you would like to fund the chaos. Next week, I'm going to be talking about this weird ass movie called The Menu that I watched last year. I will be explaining it. Tilly will be listening. But until then, go watch The Last of Us again and have a great day.
That sound is going to open the episode.